An segem neue Roman La Contrée Obscure erzählten David Van die blutige Eroberung von Florida am 16. Jahrhundert durch Spanien. Für den amerikanischen Schriftsteller war der Roman dann noch gelehnt, seinen eigenen Cherokee-Originen auf den Front zu gehen. Der Michel Delage wird im Festival Étonnant Voyageur zu Saint-Malo mit David Van drüber geschwatzt.
David Van, hello.
Good, how are you?
So let's talk about your last novel, La Contrée Obscure, which seems to be your most ambitious novel so far. I don't know if it was something that you had in your mind for years now, you were preparing, or maybe the idea just popped up spontaneously. But given that it's deeply rooted in your own personal story, was it some kind of revelation or actually a slow process?
I've been trying to write that book for about 10 years. And had various attempts, and I'm still writing about my Cherokee ancestors, still adding really to that material. I finally had a breakthrough writing about Cherokee myths. I was able to do that after years of failing to write about, these three chiefs that I'm related to. And what I loved about writing the myths is that they were strangely familiar. My grandfather had never told me that he was part Cherokee. He never said it while he was alive. But I found out later, just because the Cherokee Nation contacted me, because the chief David Van wasn't showing up in Google search results anymore. It was only my books, because I was getting a lot of press. And so that's how I found out I was related. And when I went to look at Cherokee myths, starting to do some research, I was surprised to find that these stories were stories my grandfather had told me when I was a kid. So when we were hunting in the mountains in California, he was telling me at the stream that there's a boy who could form out of the water, a wild boy, who'd be formed from the blood dripping from the bucks we had killed and from the water. And that was a story that freaked me out when I was a kid. And it turns out that's the primary Cherokee creation myth. It's about the wild boy and his brother, the Thunder Boys, together. And so it's their story that I tell in this book. And it was kind of amazing to write something that sounds so far away from me, but actually is based on the stories my grandfather told me when I was a kid.
So the way you are introducing this myth of the creation of the earth, but from the point of view of the Cherokees, you're telling your story in a two-track way, intertwined, alternating the story of the conquests in itself and also the mythical part.
Yeah, the other half of the book is, or more than half, is De Soto, the conquistador, 500 years ago invading Florida, and that was the first contact Cherokees had with Europeans. And that story is, of course, brutal, you know, and cruel, what conquistadors did. There's a parallel between that and the creation myths in that there's a character in De Soto's men named Ortiz, who had been captured by Native Americans 10 years before and lived among them. And he then ends up being a guide for De Soto, but he becomes sympathetic to Cherokee and other Native Americans, and he ends up betraying De Soto. And the story really is about his coming to a humanity, that he comes to understand the brutality of De Soto, comes to reject that, comes to help conspire in the end to, you know, De Soto's death. And in the creation myth story, there's one of the Thunder Boys, not the Wild Boy, but his brother, who suffers along with humanity and becomes sympathetic to humanity. And that whole story really is about him gaining sympathy for, you know, people. He's a god, but he becomes sympathetic for people. And so the two of them have a similar kind of character arc, which I was excited to find. That was just discovered in the writing. You know, it wasn't a plan, but it's just something I realized as I was going along in that story, that De Soto wasn't really my main character. Ortiz, one of his captains, was actually the main character.
Ortiz is an in-between character. He's between two worlds, between two systems of belief, and he gave up his actual European system of belief, which is Christianity, of course, and he lost actually faith in everything. It's not that he's now adopted the Cherokee faith, but he's become enlightened in some very tough way because he's also been burned. So
right.
Truth is burning the body properly.
Yeah, he goes through a terrible torture when he's first captured, where they put him on a spit over a fire and roast one half of him. And then he gets saved because the women in the chief's family say he'd be useful for carrying firewood and water, like for doing chores. So he ends up doing chores for a long time. So he could end up bitter and angry and against native cultures because of that experience. But instead, the next chief he's with treats him well, and he becomes more a part of that society. But you're right that ultimately he's alone and he's disillusioned and he's lost faith in everything and everyone pretty much. But he finally does what's decent. He goes against DeSoto in various ways. And I embellished, by the end, I embellished the history. Like, I follow the history very faithfully in all the events as he goes to various villages. It's right out of historical accounts. To give you, you know, an example or taste, a feeling of what it was actually like for conquistadors in Florida 500 years ago. But then in the end, I did something like the end of the movie Inglourious Basterds, when Hitler's face is shot off. I just wanted a more satisfying ending for DeSoto, something he more richly deserved. And I wanted it to be more like a novel, you know, where Ortiz could have more agency and make a decision. And I also gave DeSoto a kind of, I found funny, interior life. He has a very strange view of religion, like really crazy. And he loves food also. There's all these kind of cooking contests as they're going along with, you know, squirrel hearts and such. So I enjoyed writing the book in that way. I had to find ways to enjoy and other things to write about the characters, because the history itself is just brutality over and over. And I didn't want it to just be brutality. I wanted it to become more.
So this is the counterfactual part of your novel, but which is not counterfactual is the search for gold, which drove actually DeSoto, especially him. The conquest of Florida comes after the conquest of Mexico, which was successful in a way, but also very, very brutal. Yeah. But in this case, Florida, there is no gold, so it's a very vain conquest.
Yeah, DeSoto had experience before in South and Central America, where he was tremendously successful and did get a lot of gold, became very rich. And he believes that Florida is going to be even richer. You know, he's been granted this. He's going to be the Marquis of Florida. And he bets everything on it. He risks everything. And in fact, there isn't any gold. The funny thing is that 300 years later, a Cherokee boy will discover gold in a stream. It turns out there was. They didn't find it at the time. And at the time, he just has this manic quest for it. Everyone tells him there's no gold, and there's no sign of gold. No one's wearing any gold. I mean, any reasonable person would have turned around and gone home. But conquistadors were honestly just so insane and so driven. And they were actually following a book called Amadis, which was a heroic, you know, knightly tale of a knight going out and having, you know, battles and jousts and finding riches and rescuing maidens and such. They really were under the influence of that. It was like a powerful drug for them. They all wanted to be brave knights. And so they did unreasonable things and became terrible, terrible people.
Well, they were actually blinded by their faith or by their ambition. So I was wondering, while reading your book, how it related on a deeper level with your own story.
Yeah, I couldn't feel a lot of personal relation. It'd be like trying to find your personal story in Hitler's story. You know, I mean, DeSoto is a terrible, cruel conquistador who kills thousands of people. Like, when he goes to a village, his men rape the women and then cut off the hands of the men, putting people on the fire, burying them up to their neck. I mean, doing tortures. But, of course, I've had my own stupid quests. I was trying to succeed in a business at sea with boats, and I tried to build boats. And even though I failed over and over, and I was obviously bad at it, and everyone told me to stop, I just kept going anyway. So I did understand that drive in him, once he had his idea that he could do this and this is who he was, that he was going to do it no matter what, you know, all the evidence to the contrary. And I have been a maniac in that way, like where I've had a singular vision and goal which didn't match the facts, and I just kept following it anyway. So I guess when I was writing him, I was channeling a little bit of that.
DeSoto and Ortiz seem to impersonate various stages of consciousness. DeSoto is the one searching for things that are unreachable, obviously, and Ortiz is healed. Have you reached some kind of wisdom like Ortiz.
I don't know if I've reached wisdom in anything in life and from my writing, but it's been fun and it's been therapeutic and cathartic writing about, you know, my family and my father's suicide and such. And I do find myself in all the characters, and I learn something. I do have, you know, moments of vision as I'm writing. So with Ortiz, he's the character that I'm closest to. And as he suffers and as he gains some humanity, you know, I felt like that enriched me in some way. I felt like I became more as I was able to imagine his experience. And I found him sympathetic. You know, I made him like kind of a likable conquistador, which is, you know, a rare item. Generally, they're such monsters. They're not really likable. But because of his particular situation and position and what he did, not really helping out DeSoto as much as things go along. He starts making decisions against him. He becomes a moral character.
David Van, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Das war der amerikanische Schriftsteller David Van, hier im Mikrofon. Michel Delage, dem Schriftsteller, sein neuer Roman La Contrée Obscure bei Edition Gallmeister herauskommen.